For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com. Vic Porcelli.
Come on, you're Italian. You understand.
Every day is a busy day all of a sudden.
You talking to me? You talking to me? Tough and smart, and I love Italian, so, you know, he's definitely Italian.
At least I have this show to come and talk about it and let some stuff up.
What kind of a show are you guys putting on here today?
The Vic Porcelli Show.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Yeah.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to the Vic Porcelli Show on News Talk STL. I'm Susie Moore filling in for Vic today. Honored to do that. And no, it's not because of the weather, right, Ken?
No, nothing to do with the weather. He's visiting his son and his son's new girlfriend.
Well, there you go. Yeah. That's a legit reason.
That's legit.
Yeah, and I'm happy to be here.
No, this absolutely. And we're happy to have you.
Absolutely. Hey, you know who else we're happy to have?
Yeah.
Our next guest. He's a regular, Dr. Randy Tobler.
Dr. Randy Tobler.
Something, give us anything, Joe Biden, to tell us that you're in touch with the people.
Randy Tobler.
I don't know. We've never had that looked at.
Randy Tobler.
You guys are ahead of the curve. You probably took your masks off a couple weeks before the CDC said it was okay.
Now, Dr. Randy Tobler.
What's up, Doc?
Love it. That's a newer, that's an updated intro, isn't it?
He's had it for a little while, but we wanted to include Lou Rawls because Dr. Tobler actually played with Lou Rawls.
I think I knew that.
Yeah.
Multi-talented individual. Good morning, Dr. Tobler. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing really good. Thank you very much for having me.
Sure.
I'm wondering if Vic, is Vic going to be talking to his son and like his girlfriend about the tremendous debt that they're going to be paying and the poverty and squalor they're going to be living in, paying for forgiven college loans and all of the profligate spending during COVID. I'm wondering. I'm hoping that would probably require a lot of beer and good bourbon and cigars.
Yeah, we'll have to ask when he gets back how that conversation went. I think the last time I spoke with you, you were in the wilds of the swamp.
Yeah, and I finally, it took a minute, just now getting, it's sort of like secondhand smoke, you know, when you go into a smoky bar, you get it, finally got all the clothes laundered, and I think I've washed away most of the stench, you know, but it lingers, it infects you bad. It's like getting sprayed with skunk juice, it's hard to get rid of.
Tomato juice, I hear, helps with that. So, Dr. Tobler, I think, I don't know if it was yesterday that we saw the announcement that the Biden administration is kind of forecasting that as of May, the emergency orders regarding the pandemic are going to be suspended or over. I'm not quite sure how it is that they're determining that, you know, 3.5-4 months from now is when they're going to do that. Do you have any insight on that?
I've been scratching my head like you. I think this is purely a political calculation, and they probably have some calculations as to how many more people they need to get student loans forgiven on, or at least potentially, and other things that they're trying to sneak under the pandemic public health emergency wire, and as the transfer payments and other things that they can do. They want to extend that as long as they can, even though the science doesn't support that.
Yeah, that was my question. You know, is there a scientific reason for that, a medical reason for that, or is there a political reason for the timing here? I'm not sure.
Well, I was talking with our friend Larry Connors yesterday about that, and you know, the WHO has come out recently and said that, well, there's been a little surge. We're seeing more cases of COVID-19 related deaths, and again, that's a very fuzzy number, because is it people that died, with COVID or of COVID? Mm-hmm. That's often very difficult to discern from looking at fatality records and death reports and so forth. So. At any rate, 170,000 worldwide was the number that the WHO guy said. Well, if you look at it, in this country alone, most flu seasons, sadly, we lose 30, 40, bad ones, 50, 60,000 people to influenza.
Right.
And so you think, I mean, well, that's terrible to lose one person to influenza. That's sort of a baseline value. Now, we're talking, that's among a population of what, 330 million? Oh, excuse me, with the undocumented illegal, that's probably 360 million.
Right.
Yeah. Now you look at a population on the planet of what, 6+ billion? And only 170,000? That is not what I'd call a pandemic.
Yeah.
that's just sort of, you know, people have problems and respiratory issues, and, you know, sometimes something gets you when you, you know, it's just your time's up. I mean, I hate to say it, but this is not rationale for getting all uptight about this again and having panics, Bill. But it's certainly, they'll use anything they can to extend their ability to take from one and give to another. That's the way they roll.
Yeah, it is always interesting when you put things in perspective, like when you can stack up causes of death against each other and the risks from each and realize that some of the things that are most touted are far less, that present far less risk than some everyday mundane things like getting in your car and driving to and from work. One of the big stories that I haven't heard a whole lot about lately, but we did hear a lot about maybe 2-3 months ago, was the shortage of our antibiotic supply. What are you seeing in relation to that?
Yeah, I have. I mean, we hear spotty shortages. I haven't heard it acutely being complained about by pharmacists recently. But a month or so ago, the talk was about pediatric, you know, regular things, pediatric amoxicillin, mm-hmm. for crying out loud. It's, you know, but these things are largely because we've thrown our lots to China. Did I say China?
China.
You know, China. We've thrown our lots to them because it's a little bit cheaper. We save a few pennies. Well, you're going to lose a lot of lives, and you're going to lose a lot of people's quality of life and their prosperity when you throw in for the short-term cheap gain with the Chinese-made products, whether it's at the big box store or whether it's Chinese raw materials or pharmaceuticals are already done. China, and for that matter, India is a big supplier of those kind of things as well. So there can be quality and, of course, quantity concerns. So, I mean, the antibiotic story is related to the supply chain issues, sure. just like the rest of the economy has suffered with them.
Sure. Yeah, it is interesting. You know, I don't think we gave it a whole lot of thought before COVID about how much of our economy and our healthcare system and the products that we rely on a daily basis have been outsourced and therefore are, to a certain degree, at the mercy of the goodwill of the countries where they're being manufactured.
Yeah, there was a story in the Wall Street Journal just yesterday about how, I guess, some very small but very important chips, you know, electronic chips, that there's been sanctions against China getting them. The engineering and physics, the agency over there that is really responsible for their nuclear program and development, how even though since like the late 90s there's been sanctions against transfer from NVIDIA and Intel and others who manufacture those directly into China. Well, it's not a far cry to imagine what's been going on. They have been getting those circuitously, right, through an end around by that. I guess some of these things are in personal computers. I don't know, but they get them through other sources, and they are aggressively building their nuclear stockpile on a lot of our technologies back, right? And I mean, they're going to go from what was it, 400 or 700 warheads within a few years to 1500, and it's just, you just feel this incredible building of tensions and potentialities for just existential threats to the planet. And I don't know how we avoid it, but the Chinese are very smart at stealing our technology, stealing our commerce. And I don't know, I hope someday they don't clean our clock with it. That was the one good thing about Donald Trump. He called them out and he did his best to try to, you know, put in place things that would bring them to their knees financially as best we could. And I think he did hurt them a little bit. Their GDP was down last year. It's up a little bit now. But we've got to keep a close eye on them and not worry so much about crazy Putin over there.
Good morning, Dr. Tobler. This is Ken. We were talking to Scott Powell talking to Scott Powell earlier about China, and he's really, you know, he wants to get everything. He wants to keep a close eye on them as well. But I wanted to find out from you what your thoughts were on we've got the CHIPS Act right now, but also bringing over our pharmaceuticals and really just kind of stepping away from China and their manufacturing. Do you think we should start making moves? Because I know Donald Trump during his administration started to do that, but of course he couldn't finish it. But what are your thoughts on as far as getting us back to the United States with manufacturing?
You know, as you get older, you get more philosophical, Ken. So with that disclaimer, I've come to the conclusion that whether it's law and order, whether it's corporate criminality, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's, in this case, you know, bringing manufacturing back, there's limited things that a president or, for that matter, the Congress can do. This is going to take a cultural day of reckoning in the minds of Americans. we're going to need to decide. I mean, look, I heard that the nosebleed tickets for Super Bowl are in the thousands,
$6,000,
and then it goes up to $25,000 for good seats. You know, look, we're going to have to decide to pay a few more pennies to keep the local small businessman and woman in business. We're going to need to pay a few more pennies to have solid quality products, whether it's for railroad car, you know, wheels, or whether it's for, you know, a pocket comb. We're going to have to make a decision whether we're going to support one another and be independent like we started out 200 and some odd years ago, or if we're going to be at the mercy of whatever country is deciding to have world dominion. We know that that never works out well for countries that decide that. It ultimately breaks down. And so we're going to have to make a decision to do that. I think at the edges, can an administration, can a party, can a Congress do something? Yeah, maybe. But ultimately, people have to make decisions. Do I want to buy the American product that costs a little bit more and supports American commerce and sustainability and prosperity and freedom? Or do we want to be on a leash from the likes of China? And I don't know whether the American people really have thought it through that way. They expect someone in Washington, D.C. to fix that for them.
Sure.
It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen, my friend.
Yeah, outsource the thinking while you outsource the manufacturing.
Yeah, really.
Doctor, you mentioned, we were talking about the cost of things, and I noticed, I didn't get a chance to follow up on it and dig into it too much, but I did see that Senator Hawley is introducing some measure to try and bring relief to on the cost of insulin. Have you seen any of that?
Yeah. Again, this is a thing where the person experiencing the decrease in their copay, a max of, what, 30 or 35, they're going to feel that, but the system is still going to absorb the high cost of insulin. The high cost of insulin, and it's a complex issue, but that doesn't just result from evil pharma. That results from evil pharma being told by the government in some case they need to give drugs very cheaply to this or that agency, this or that safety net, Medicaid, hospital, so forth, or they don't get the VA contract. So the government is, again, mixing or getting into the market, and so they don't make a profit on drug A. They got to find a way to make a profit on drug B. And for those who don't think that the pharma should make a profit, sooner or later, we're all going to need the miraculous things, whether it's for our rheumatoid arthritis or whether it's for our new antibiotic that meets the resistant bug. And so, you know, and then you've got your pharmacy benefit managing people. And there's a big black box there, and there's a collusory relationship, frankly, between pharma and big box pharmacy benefits like Express Scripts out on Highway 70 by the airport. Doesn't look like they're doing too poorly, do they? But that's where a lot of the profit is. Most of the profit is in the distribution channels. And it's got to, the more that the government endorses direct-to-patient relationships between the provider of a good or service, whether it's a pharmaceutical or a doctor or a hospital, and cutting out the middleman, including insurance companies who are making bank with premiums and not sharing that with savings for the patient or, for that matter, for the providers of care, things aren't going to change. Sorry for that long-winded answer, but
I know the
diagnosis and I know the solution. I just wish I could get people to listen to me. So look, the insulin's going to be cheaper for a few people, right? Probably 40 to 50% of it that's too expensive for now. But the system is not making it any cheaper, which means we all pay for it indirectly through premiums or other drug costs.
No, and that's why we like having you on, Dr. Tobler, because we appreciate your wisdom.
That's right.
You know, one of the things that we've talked about, I mean, I've noticed, I think anybody who pays attention has noticed, is the sort of seeming shift in the parties and the values that the left and the right seem to be embracing. And it wasn't all that long ago that the left was really high on opposing and going after big pharma. And now it seems like we've seen a flip-flop on that. Am I imagining that?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, whose target are you going to have, whose back are you going to have the target on, right? And where is it politically expedient to do that? It's fashionable to go after pharma, and there's plenty to go after. You know, don't kid yourself about that. But it's our U.S. research and development in pharma that results in the miraculous cures. And so what these guys need to do is what they need to do on Wall Street and everywhere else. They need to watch out about the guys sitting behind computers, not really being productive. Man, am I going to get some people ticked off at me. Well, people that aren't really making a difference in the world. but they're shuffling cards. They're manipulating middlemen and distribution channels. And that's where the noise and the expense is. Mm-hmm. And that's because we have a regulatory apparatus manipulated by those people that then, and that includes pharma and big hospital chain corporations and insurers. They go to, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I'm becoming a uniparty, you know, equal opportunity hater here, because they've all done it. Look, mm-hmm. Republicans voted for CARES Act 1 and CARES Act 2 and Money from Heaven 3 and whatever else handout transfer they did. It was clumsily done. It was recklessly done. People that didn't need the money got the money. People that were able to defraud the government probably will get away with it. Some won't. It was crazy. And the Republicans were equally culpable for it. Now, at least they have the sense that they should come out and say, look, we spent too much. We were part of the problem, but we propose to be part of the solution. At least we're going to take a mea culpa. The other side doesn't even want to admit it. There's plenty of blame to go around on pharma. But look, if we don't have the U.S. ingenuity in pharmaceuticals, the pace of cancer treatment, which has really been almost like a doubling of efficacy in every year in the last decade, it's been amazing. People are living with lung cancer now as a chronic disease rather than a death sentence.
My mom.
And we've got to recommend, we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. That's the bottom line here.
Right.
Hey, Randy, you mentioned, I guess the uniparty, that's an actual, in some circles, that's an actual thing, the uniparty being Republicans and Democrats together, the establishment, in other words. And what do you think it's going to take to make Republicans actually act on some things and get something done? Like, for example, Matt Gaetz, you've got Jim Jordan, you've got even to a degree Kevin McCarthy falling in line and trying to do some actual real things to help the American people. Do you think it's going to take something radical like actually doing your job for this to happen? I mean, how do you think this is going to happen for the conservatives to be able to do that?
I'm hoping they save some of Ronald Reagan's genes or cryo-preserved him and somehow they clone him. It's going to take a communicator to educate the people, that, for instance, we need to stop taxing productivity and we need to look at a fair tax. For the first time, according to the negotiations, I understand, we're going to have a fair tax vote in the House, and it's not going to pass. And even if it did, it wouldn't pass the Senate. But we need someone to just not have that vote so that every Republican go out in the next election and say, look, I voted to really make a difference in your taxes, and poorer people and middle class are going to save tax money. And the elite, the John Kerry's, they're going to pay more. And we need that. But we need to have someone to articulate that as eloquently and as engagingly as Ronald Reagan does. And God love Donald Trump. But he was as effective with some as he was divisive with others. And so the net gain, as we saw in 2020, just didn't work out well. His policies, articulated by a Reagan-esque kind of a person, would have resulted in a landslide that no amount of fraud wouldn't have mattered. A little bit of fraud here and there. But it shouldn't have been that close. But that's because we don't have a great communicator. We need a great communicator. I don't think individual Congress people are going to do it. They should beat the drum and they should have a consensus statement. And like the Democrats, the Republicans should get in line. And even though that may not be perfect for this person or that person, get in line with the consensus and don't let the American people hear anything else but the consensus position. Dems are very good at that. The Republicans should learn from it.
Well, Randy, speaking of great communicators, I know you've got your show coming up this Saturday morning. Do you know yet? I know it's Tuesday. But do you have an idea of what you might be talking about?
Yeah, I'm really concerned about the shell game that the administration has been playing with the immigration. You know, they claim to close the border here, but they opened it with the parole program. So we're going to be talking with Andrew Arthur from Center for Immigration Studies, and I'm going to get an economist on too to see where we're at and with the economy and see what the crystal ball shows.
Great. Well, we will definitely be tuning in and wish you the best of the rest of the week and appreciate you joining us today. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy.
Folks, stick around. You are listening to the Vic Porcelli Show on News Talk STL 101.9/94.1.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So let me tell you what this is all about. I can summarize this debate of the last 2 days into one sentence. Joe Biden lowered your gas prices and Republicans are upset about it. That's what this is about. Joe Biden lowered your gas prices last year, And that makes Republicans mad. And how do we know? They said it out loud. The gentlewoman from Georgia earlier this morning just said that Joe Biden lowered your gas prices for political reasons. You know, I don't care why a president lowers your gas prices. If any president can lower your gas prices, we should support that president's action.
Susie?
Hi, folks. You're listening to the Vic Porcelli Show. This is Susie Moore filling in for Vic, and I am chuckling because that is the illustrious congressman from California, which has so many of them, Ted Lieu. Do you like Ted's rationale there, Ken? He says the Republicans are mad that Joe Biden has lowered gas prices, and then he says they said that he did it for political reasons. He contradicts himself in that clip.
Yeah, totally. First of all, he didn't lower gas prices. When you raise gas prices beyond anything that in the history of this country, and then you start to lower them a little bit, you're lowering technically, but they're not as low as they were. I remember during the Trump administration, in my area of the world, called Afton, it was $1.81 for almost a year and a half to 2 years, and then it went up from there.
Right.
When Biden took over.
And let's be clear about what we're talking about. The president isn't sitting there with his finger on a switch, raising and lowering gas prices.
No.
Even if he's fully lucid, he's not doing that.
Right.
Okay. It's the policies that the administration enacts that have an effect on that. And there's no question that when he took office, Joe Biden took aim at the energy industry and at oil and gas prices.
Day one.
Yeah. Day one. Literally day one. And as a result, we saw gas prices start to rise. Were those further impacted by the war in Ukraine? I'm sure they were. There are market forces in play here, too. The reason people are mad is because the way that Joe Biden went about attempting to lower gas prices, because it was advantageous politically to do so, was by draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And now our savings account, when it comes to oil and gas supply, is depleted.
But
that's why we're mad.
Oh, but that's not politicizing it at all, is it?
It's totally politicizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Dad.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, Schlemiel, Schlemazel, Hudson's Amber Incorporated.
Give us any chance, we'll take it.
Susie's bopping her head.
You're darn right I am. This is my childhood here.
Oh, yeah.
Ken is indulging me because I asked him if we could maybe play a little bit of the Laverne and Shirley Open in honor of Miss Cindy Williams, who sadly passed away yesterday. Shirley Feeney.
Yeah, I remember this when I'd be home from school sick.
Mm-hmm.
My mom loved this show.
Oh, yeah. It was a great show. There was so much Americana packed into the television shows of our childhood. And I'm sure that some people could say that about more recent ones, but obviously I'm kind of, you know, my affinity is for the 70s and early 80s because that was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were tough times. There were tough things going on in the 70s in our world. No question about it. We had, stagflation. We had all kinds of issues going on. We had the Iran hostage crisis. It's not like there weren't serious things in our world.
Oh, not only did we have high gas prices, but in the early 70s, we had the embargo.
Yeah.
We had the, what was it, the OPEC?
The oil embargo?
Yeah, oil embargo, and we didn't have gas.
Yeah. Yeah, and part of it is being seen through the lens of looking back on my childhood, but things did seem simpler then, and our entertainment seemed a little simpler then.
Yeah, I was of course mentioning when I was homesick the reruns that they would play later on, but originally, man, that was the evening show. That
Tuesday
one,
nights.
Oh yeah,
Happy Days followed by Laverne and Shirley.
Exactly, and actually, Laverne and Shirley came from the Happy Days episodes.
Mm-hmm. They did. They were a spinoff. I think it was like they were a blind date set up.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But great, great television history, great era of television, and fond memories of Cindy Williams and her role as Shirley Feeney on Laverne and Shirley. So I just wanted to mark her passing.
And she started off in feature film.
Did she?
Yeah,
she was in American Graffiti.
She was in American Graffiti originally. I think there were others, but that was the main one that I remember.
Henry Winkler wasn't. The Fonz character was sort of loosely tailored after the character, but he wasn't in it. But I think it was Ron Howard in American Graffiti.
Oh, yeah, that's where she met him.
Okay.
And later on, that influenced, the relationship later on, too. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
So,
Cindy Williams. She was in her 70s.
Yeah, she was, I think, 74.
What did she pass away from?
I meant to look, and I didn't. I forgot to check and see what it was. I know we lost Penny Marshall, 2018. She died, I think, of, diabetes complications.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. Maybe you know or don't. Gary Marshall, who's Penny's father.
Right.
I think he's still alive.
I don't know. I have to look that up.
You know, and Carl Reiner, who's the father of Rob Reiner, Meathead,
yeah,
is still alive.
Mm, is he?
Yeah. Mel Brooks, still alive. So there's something to, like, the those kind of comics of yore and their longevity. Gary Marshall may not be. I'm not 100% sure about that, but he's looking. He's looking it up.
Yeah.
Gary Marshall is...
Carl Reiner's gone.
Oh, he is?
You know, I only know that. I only know Carl Reiner's gone because I interviewed him.
Oh.
And he intimidated the hell out of me because...
He lived well into his 90s, though, didn't he?
Yes. He was since 1922 to 2020.
Okay.
So 98. Yeah. And I interviewed him back in the late 90s for a movie, I think it was 10,000 Years or something like that. And he was just such a sweet man.
Really?
He was amazing to talk to. They told him to shut it down, the interview, because it was going long. And he looked at them and he said, I'll shut it down when I'm ready to shut it down. And he started to look and he asked me where I was from. And then he said something to me that made me stop in my tracks. And it actually messed me up to where I almost forgot my next question. He said, you're a good interviewer. Carl Reiner.
Wow.
So I referred to that little thing that I had with him when his son, Rob Reiner, said some stupid stuff on Twitter. I recited what I just said to you, and I said, you are not your father's son. There's no way.
It is an interesting thing to think about, how far the apple fell from the tree. I mean, I don't know what Carl Reiner's politics were, to be quite honest.
Well, I don't know either. But
Hollywood denizen, they probably were liberal, but that didn't influence his approach to the world and entertaining the world.
And just being a kind person. I mean, it's being generally kind. I've always been of the opinion I can separate the celebrity from the politician,
100%.
The political thought. You know, I still enjoy, Vic and I talk about this all the time, I still very much enjoy, major actors in their roles, and then I hate their politics. And I hate them for it, but I love what they do in their work, so.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely can do that. And you kind of have to, because so much of Hollywood is left-leaning. If you're right-leaning and you can't divorce your politics from your entertainment selections, you're going to be kind of limited. Although there's a lot of good conservative or content put out there by people who are right of center, so.
Yeah, but it's funny. The left cannot do that. I mean, if you open your mouth and you step out of line in any way, shape, or form, then you're just, they'll ostracize you.
Tolerance ain't a two-way street.
No, it's not. But yeah, Cindy Williams, got getting back to her, though.
Yeah.
She's going to be missed.
Yes, she is. So she's gone. Penny Marshall's gone. I think the guy that played Squiggy has passed away.
I thought I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so I think that Lenny's the only guy that's left.
Lenny.
No, I'm drawing a blank on his name now. And he's in a lot of, I don't know. It'll come to me. Anyway, he's in a lot of movies and stuff. He's been in a lot of the, Spinal Tap.
He's still in.
All those.
One of my
movies.
Favorites. Yeah.
Good stuff. You know, Ken, I was thinking about this when we were talking to Randy. There's one of the conversations today revolves around big tech.
Yeah.
And we talk about big pharma, and we talk about all these big entities or institutions, and it got me to thinking about how we emphasize how big is bad. I mean, if you're talking about big tech, you're usually talking about it in a pejorative way.
Yeah.
If you're talking about big pharma, you're speaking of it in a negative light.
Right.
And yet then we talk about banks that are quote unquote too big to fail. It's interesting the way we kind of flip things when it suits us.
It is interesting. But Susie, I think what you're seeing is once an entity gets so big, they kind of do go off the rails a little bit.
Sure.
I mean, you've got Amazon, for example. I mean, they're doing some things now that, once we get so used to using something and then suddenly they change, it's kind of hard to divorce yourself from them if you don't align with their ideology.
Yeah.
And look at Disney. Disney was raking in the money. I mean, they were taking barrels full of money, daily for their movies and for their, for Disneyland and Disney World. But now, because they've changed their ideology, I don't know why they did it, they're actually losing money, losing billions of dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I actually have thoughts on that. We'll have to get to that when we come back after this next break, because coming up soon, we've got our next guest, Drew Thomas Allen, regular Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday morning guest. Looking forward to speaking with him. Folks, you are listening to the Vic Porcelli Show on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
He's funny.
He's funny. You're funny. Not funny looking, just funny.
Just funny.
Folks, you're listening to the Vic Porcelli Show on News Talk STL. I'm Susie Moore filling in for Vic today. Ken's on the wheels of steel over there, keeping me on the tracks.
Trying to.
Am I making it tough for you?
No,
am I a challenge?
You're doing great, actually.
Problem child.
No.
Well, I appreciate all of your help. And now we've got coming up with us, joining us now, Drew Thomas Allen, who apparently has a little Italian history with Vic.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Drew. Yeah, Drew normally sings along with this.
That's right.
Hey, Drew.
Hey, epic song. Questa mattina mi sono alzato. That's right. I just woke up, actually. But anyway.
You need some coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drew, welcome into the show. I appreciate you joining us this morning. And I know you've probably got a lot on your mind. I was looking at your Twitter feed, and I noticed one of the things that you mentioned there was this acquittal yesterday of Mark Houck up in Pennsylvania, the pro-life father who was, I think some would say, maybe railroaded by the DOJ.
Yeah, look, I mean, he got justice, you know, and what's really astounding, I mean, it exposes, one, how just corrupt this DOJ is. I guess I have a lot of thoughts. The first thing, you know, if people aren't familiar, right? I mean, Mark, this is a guy who was in an abortion clinic, he's a pro-life activist, and an older man who was escorting a woman into the abortion facility got into a yelling match with him and his son and was using expletives. His son's a younger kid. And it was aggressive. And so, you know, Mark pushed the guy and he happened to fall down. Now, he didn't get hurt. And, you know, it didn't go anywhere. There weren't any charges. And then, you know, a year after the event happened, right, you know, this is around the midterm time, right? The reason they did this because they wanted to make abortion an issue and they wanted to paint pro-life activists like they were Jane's Revenge, you know, the left-wing terrorist organization that's bombing, you know, pro-life centers around the country. And anyway, so, you know, a year after the fact, the FBI shows up, like, with a SWAT team, and they you know, like they do with Peter Navarro and all their political enemies, you know, they woke him up in the middle of the night at gunpoint. And they tried to get him on this, I mean, it doesn't matter what it's called, this phony thing that's never been used before, and to make an example of him and intimidate the pro-life crowd. And thankfully, you know, this jury acquitted him. But, you know, look, if this had happened in a D.C. Grand jury, I bet he would have been convicted. That's what's so scary.
Yeah, it is important to note that this was a trial held in Pennsylvania. It was a federal court case, so I'm not sure that it would have, where all it would have drawn its jurors from, but definitely not from the D.C. area. So that, I'm sure, made a difference here.
Yeah. And the thing that I thought about, Susie and Ken, is that, look, I mean, you know, we just had the episode in Memphis, which is an absolute result, I believe, of Democrat policies. I think that, honestly, you could say that without the Democrat policies defund the police movement, it's very likely that Tyre Nichols would probably still be with us. But look, the Democratic Party wants to federalize the police force. They started to try and move towards that under Obama. And if you see how the FBI, which is, you know, a federal instrument, how they're a blunt instrument of the Democrat Party, I mean, can you imagine if they get away and do that with the police force, nationalize it? And I mean, you know, some partisan administration is telling the police force in Louisiana what their priorities should be. I mean, it's a recipe for tyranny.
It is. Drew, I want to explore that a little further. I know that we can talk about, you know, Democratic policies in urban areas that are actually, you know, fostering additional crime and creating additional issues. How do you see those tying into what happened with Tyre Nichols? I mean, it's obviously, I think most people that are familiar with the story or that have watched the video are distressed by what happened here. You know, feel like the police overstepped here, and obviously a young man is dead as a result of that. But how would you tie that into the Democratic policies?
Yeah, and look, you know, I am not, you know, some of my colleagues are shock jocks. I'm not a shock jock. I mean, I sincerely mean it when I say that the Democrat policies contributed to that man's death. Now, look, the first things first, the police chief there, she should never have been in that position. She was actually fired from the Atlanta police force because she was involved in trying to cover up pornography charges, an investigation into one of her colleagues' husbands. And so she was fired for it. So how can somebody fail upwards from Atlanta and go over to Memphis and get hired? She shouldn't have been a police chief in any police force in the entire country. Yeah. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, there were news reports during the Defund the Police movement out of Memphis talking about celebrating how they were changing, you know, how they were going to police. And they lowered the standards, so you didn't need as much education or work experience. And they were going on this campaign to try and hire specifically black individuals for the police force. Now, there's lots of black people on police forces, and many of them are qualified. But in the case of Memphis, I mean, this affirmative action hiring and or this lowering of the standards, it's literally killing us because you're not getting the best candidates. And the irony is, the argument from the left, right, is that, you know, these police officers, many of them are unqualified. They should not be police officers. And so their response to get better police officers is to actually lower the standards. And so two of those police officers involved in the brutal beating of Tyre Nichols were hires because they lowered the standards. And so, I mean, you just have to look at this and scratch your head and say, I mean, what are you people thinking? You know, and then if you juxtapose what they did in Memphis, you had a young man who was 19 in Georgia on the police force who resigned because he was basically threatened. What he did is he put a social media post or something out there that said that, you know, marriage is between a man and a woman. There's no such thing as gay marriage. Now, the guys in Georgia, I guarantee you most of the people he's protecting agree with him 100%, because if you're a Christian, that is your point of view. And, you know, he was flagged and he was threatened by his superiors. And they told him, you know, hey, if you post something out there that offends anybody again, you know, you're going to get canned. So this guy was probably a great candidate, would have been a great contributor to any police force around the country. He's 19. He really wanted to be the police officer. And he's told, you know, hey, shut your mouth if you don't say, you know, what the, you know, official kind of Democrat Party policy is. Now, if he'd been at some Muslim, I guarantee he would have been fired. Mm-hmm. Nor would he have been fired if he posted something, you know, that offended Christians, you know, about gay marriage being between two men. So, I mean, this is outrageous what they're doing. They're gutting police forces.
Hey, Drew, this is Ken. Speaking of good candidates, Donald Trump, he's been stumping. He stumped down in Columbia, South Carolina this past weekend. I want you to hear something, and then we'll get your comments on it.
Our public schools have been taken over by the radical left maniacs. Here is my plan to save American education, restore power to American parents. First, we will cut federal funding for any school or program pushing critical race theory, gender ideology, or other inappropriate racial, sexual, or political content onto our children. We're not going to allow it to happen. Next, I will direct the Department of Justice and Education to open civil rights investigations into any school district that has engaged in race-based discrimination.
So Donald Trump, he promises to empower parents and he vows to defeat gender ideology, and he calls it a cult. Drew, he's staying within his lane. He's trying to say he's not talking about 2020. He's not talking about anything from before. He's saying, here's what I'm going to do, and here's what Biden's doing terribly. Do you think he's going to stick on that path?
Yeah, I think he will. Look, I mean, I would say, you know, look, Donald Trump's political instincts got him into the presidency, in 2016, into the Oval Office in 2017. I think that, you know, that there are mistakes that anybody makes. I mean, it's easy to sit here and judge somebody when the spotlight's on them and you have a media that's totally unfair to them.
Yeah.
But I think he understands. I mean, that's not a winning issue right now. I mean, you know, you've got to focus on winning in 2024. And I think he understands that, you know, his bond with his voter base has to do with supporting, you know, those things that we deem important, which are fundamentally important to this country. And so, you know, it's funny to watch the conversations out there. The DeSantis cult now. You got people in the quote-unquote Trump cult too. But look, I mean, the guy's out there doing exactly what he needs to do, making a case to the American people. And where we fail, where I hope he continues to succeed, is explaining why America is in the situation it's in, tying that to the Democrat Party and its policies, and then also offering solutions and telling Americans how it's going to benefit their lives. That has to be done.
Drew, one of the interesting things about this election cycle is the presidential cycle started about like a second after the midterms were over. And Donald Trump, of course, went ahead and announced his candidacy for 2024, which is the earliest I think anyone's ever announced. Because I think in back for the 2016 cycle, he announced in June of 2015. So we're still 6 months ahead of that, or 5 months now. How do you see it shaking out amongst the would-be Republican candidates? Do you see anybody making a run at challenging him?
No, I really don't. You know, I wish it was more interesting than that, but I really don't. I mean, the only person who's going to rival him, in any kind of relatively serious manner is going to be DeSantis. He's expected to announce his candidacy as well, and it's going to be ugly. I just people just need to understand, it's great that we squabble amongst ourselves. I'd say us Republicans and conservatives, it's fine. It's like at our dinner table, we can fight, we can attack our own opponents.
Trump,
we can attack. Yeah, it's good. But the problem is when it goes outside of our house and we start to do it for an audience of Democrats, it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
It weakens us. So, I think that when we approach this, it needs to be done that way. A lot of people are concerned about Donald Trump's position in terms of the vaccine and things like that. I think there's some credibility to that. I mean, I think he needs to kind of it's tough. I mean, look, a lot of his base, that's a big issue for them.
Yeah.
The vaccines, the corruption there, Pfizer and everything else. And the last thing they want to hear is him sounding like some kind of a pitch man, some salesman for Pfizer. That's the only issue I think that could really harm his chances.
Do you think
that really is?
Sorry, Ken. No, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just saying, I just think that's the one issue that could be kind of an Achilles heel for him.
Do you think he'll come around and denounce the vaccine?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think he will.
I hope he does. I hope. Man.
Yeah. I know. I wish he would, too. I mean, it's interesting. It's hard to get an objective understanding, too. He's attacking DeSantis, and he's talking about how DeSantis and his kind of cobbled together campaign in the early stages here, how they're a little bit disingenuous about how hard DeSantis came out against lockdowns, and actually there is some truth to that. DeSantis did lock down in a heavier way in the beginning than Trump even recommended. He said to focus on hotspots, and I believe DeSantis said he's gonna kind of lock down everything. Now, DeSantis did come out earlier than everyone else and open up, and I don't take anything away from him. He was the leader of the movement there for freedom during the pandemic and lockdowns. Politics is ugly. It's ugly, and it needs to be ugly, and it needs to be nasty on our side.
Yep.
And it's just you get in the boxing ring, and you do your thing. And then you get out and you shake hands. I understand. Maybe it's because I do the PR thing too, and I know a lot of these, people behind the scenes. But, it's just that's the world we're in. And we need it to be as ugly as possible because we need a really strong candidate who's ready to come out and defeat the Democrats.
Drew, we've just got a couple minutes left, but speaking of politics kind of being ugly, Matt Gaetz kind of has stirred things up, both in the fight to get Kevin McCarthy elected as Speaker and pushing back against that. And I think yesterday he kind of turned some heads when he said he wasn't sure that he was in favor of removing Omar from the Foreign Relations Committee. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw it, and I listened to the clip of him saying that. And look, I said he needs to remove her. We need to play that way. But I think that I do respect kind of the way he conversed about it. I mean, his point was that, look, Swalwell and Adam Schiff, Schiff slept with had a relationship with a Chinese spy. He's compromised. And he was actually put on an intel committee, after that news was even revealed and the FBI said, hey, Swalwell might be compromised. And then, Schiff is the biggest leaker of classified information I've ever seen.
And liar.
And so, he and liar and probably future senator from where I live in California.
Oh, God.
But,
sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can always move, I guess. But so I just say, his point was, look, these guys, the reason they can't be on this committee or whatever is because, look, they're compromised. They actually have been caught. We know that this took place. And his point with her, I guess, Ilhan Omar, is that she despite her anti-Semitism, despite these things, she hasn't leaked classified documents to my knowledge, so she's not in the same position. Right. So, I mean, it's a very political maneuver, the way to say that.
Sure.
But look, I mean, they kicked Marjorie Taylor Greene off committees because not because she leaked classified documents. You know, they did this to a couple of Republicans because, you know, they didn't like some of their controversial positions. But so actually, if you use the Democrat rule, she's an anti-Semite. She's come out and said things that are appalling. So that is grounds to keep her off committees.
Yeah,
sure. Same standard. Drew, where can people find you on your socials?
Twitter, Drew Thomas Allen, and then my Substack, drewallen.substack.com. And then my podcast is The Drew Allen Show.
And it is good, people.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, Drew, thanks so much for joining us this morning. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Same here. Thank you. Everyone have a good day.
Hey, thanks, Drew, and we'll see you on Twitter.
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone.
There was that moment where you're not sure.
Yeah, I know. He had to move on to another.
Ken, this was a fast 2 hours.
It was fun, though.
Yeah,
you did.
I had a
very
lot of fun.
Very well,
well,
man.
Thanks. I have all the help and support I could ask for. Folks, you've been listening to the Vic Porcelli Show on News Talk STL. Coming back after the top of the hour will be the Dan Bongino Show, so keep it here at 101.9 94.1.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.